So just have a look at the architectural changes that happened. How many of you have deployed ADFS so far? Okay, so ADFS version 2, 2.x, was that? Anyone deployed the current version? Okay, some people on the internet are calling it ADFS 3, all right? And I went to the product group and I said, what should I be calling this? And they said ADFS. What about ADFS 3? Oh, no, 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 no. So it has just been badged as ADFS. So what you have to do is say ADFS on server 2012 R2. So it's quite a mouthful now. But it shouldn't really be called ADFS 3. And a lot of people on the internet are calling it 3. A lot of the guys in Microsoft, the Microsoft consultants, call it 3 as well. But the product group want it called ADFS. And then we're going to look at the web application proxy. Web application proxy combines the role of a publishing proxy and the ADFS proxy, which is, after all, really a publishing role. Okay. The workplace join, so we can actually join a device to the workplace, so a device is now known about in the Active Directory. It's not domain joined, doesn't get group policy, but it's known to the AD. And we can authenticate that device. We can also make decisions whether if we can say only domain, you know, workplace join devices are allowed to access this server. Right? If you're not workplace joined, you must use two-factor authentication. We can make those types of authentication decisions. So we've got this authentication policies, including the multi-factor. And then what I want to do is just have a look at the integrating all of this with the Windows Azure Active Directory. Oh, I haven't updated this slide, or as it should now be called, the Microsoft Azure Active Directory, or the MAD directory. So today's identity challenge. Okay, first one, where is the application? Is it sitting on your premises? Is it sitting on a partner premises? Or is it sitting in the cloud somewhere? We don't know. The users, where are they coming from? Well, we want to make it a really rich experience for users. They want to be able to use applications, consume applications everywhere. So they could be from our own organization. They could be from a partner organization, and we need to give them access to our applications. They could be a customer. And by a customer, we mean someone who hopefully probably buys things from us, right? And that could be a customer who is sort of almost at partner level, so, you know, gold customer or something like that, or somebody who would really just like to log in using their Facebook account or using their Google account. And then the device, and this is the real challenge, the device should be anything. All right, so no longer do we have control over that device the way we would like to as admins. How many admins here are control freaks? Oh, a few people admit to it. And then, what have we left out? We've left out the user's identity. Where is that? It could be in our own AD. It could be in a partner's AD. It could be in an enterprise third-party identity provider, such as there are companies like Covisint, CA, etc., which deal with managing, they charge you per user, you know, and per authentication maybe. And then, of course, if there are identity providers like Facebook, like Google, like Yahoo, right, which I call the sort of social identity providers rather than the enterprise. We need to join this lot together, and what joins it together is federation. And which means our app can be anywhere, our user can be anywhere on anything, and the identity can be anywhere, and effectively on anything as well. So what should it give us? Number one, it wants to give us an identity framework that can be consumed by the application and service regardless of where they're located. So how do I authenticate to that server? Oh, I'm using a federated protocol of some kind. Where is that server? It's in the cloud. Oh, I've got fed up with that cloud service. I've just moved it on-premises. Right? And everything should still carry on and work. We want one set of user credentials allowing us SSO to websites and services. Okay? And you know, traditionally we've always gone to websites, but now, of course, with mobile phones and mobile phone apps, they're not consuming from websites, they're consuming from web services. So we need that ability now to go to different web services. We want solution based on industry standard protocols, and as I say, we want support for browsers, and we want support for active devices. So, you know, the app you're running on your, or I should say your Windows phone, I was about to say your iPhone, I'd be sacked. All right, so the app that's running on the Windows. Actually, to be fair, Microsoft now have recognized that iPhones and iPads exist. So just to give you an idea of the flow, so that when we start looking at things, we can work out what happens is we've got a claims aware app there. We hit it, we browse to it, right? Or we could actually go to it with their web service. And it basically says, you're not authenticated. So off you go back, and we've got a redirect which takes us to the security token service. Which security token service? The security token service that application trusts. Right? So the application, we need to configure it to trust a security token service. There's no interaction between the app and the security token service. Right? So it just set a trust relationship up, and we can do that manually on both sides, or scripted on both sides, or we can exchange what's called federation metadata. And the metadata describes the trust relationship from both sides, and we can exchange that. And how do we establish trust? By looking at the signature and saying, that's okay, because we trust that certificate that signed it. And then we do the authentication, query for any attributes we want from the AD, and we return a security token. And that security token is then bounced back from the user's browser and gets posted back to the ClaimsAware application. And the ClaimsAware application opens up the token, says, yep, that's great, you're authenticated. Here's some cookies that you can come back with now. Now, whatever protocol we're using, it's a very, very similar style of operation. Rather than using cookies, if we were going against web services, which are REST web services, we're probably using OAuth 2. And with OAuth 2, what you do is you have a small, lightweight JSON token or JSON formatted token, or we call it a JSON web token or a JOT, which is presented each time we go to the web service. So rather than representing a cookie, we represent a web token. So, but it's very similar in style. If we get another IDP involved, what happens now is we browse. This guy says, you're not authenticated. Go to the STS I trust. Now, the STS that web app trusts could have its own identity store, right? Or it could go off and trust another security token service, at which point we need to do what's referred to as home realm discovery. We need to ask the user, where is their home realm that can authenticate them? All right? Now, we can automate this process. We could just ask them for their email. All right? As soon as we know their email, we just look it up in database and say, oh, it belongs to that organization that we trust. Or we can give them a drop-down list. But you probably don't want to do that, you know, a list of all the different partners that we trust. It, you know, but home realm discovery needs to be automated in some way. We then go up to the partner, and partner authenticates us and produces a security token. That security token can't be consumed by the application because the application doesn't trust the partner organization. The application trusts the STS it knows about. So the only person that can consume this token is your STS. So the token gets presented back to your STS. The STS will check the token, check the signature, says, great, open the token up, and can make further decisions based on what's in that token, applying rules, and then produce a token that can be consumed by the application. And we send the token back, and you return the cookie and the pages. So that's the basic way that it actually operates. In terms of key concepts, we have our user, or subject, principal, whatever you want to call him, or her. goes off to a security token service, and notice the request. It's a request for application X. All right. So the security token service has to know about application X and what type of token application X would like to have. All right. And we craft a token once we've authenticated the user specifically for application X. Now, if you liken this to Kerberos, it's not too different. Because we go to Kerberos and we say, I want a token to server Y. And Kerberos goes, oh, yes, here, here's a token for server Y. All right, and it's all got, it's cryptoed with the server Y principal details. All right, but of course, it's one size fits all. Whereas here, we craft a token with the requirements of app X on that token. And then the token can be presented to app X. What's on the token? Pretty much anything you like. All right. In that case, I've got a name, group, membership. But you don't have to have a name. You don't need to know the name, person's name. You might just need to know that they're from the sales department. Or you just might need to know the name of their manager. All right. So it's entirely up to you in designing this what actually goes on the token. Now, the whole thing, all these claim rules get processed. So when we pull something from a claims provider, what we do is we apply acceptance transform rules. And these are the claims that we will take. And it could be from the AD, or it could be what we'll take from a partner. So these are claims we'll take. We put these claims into a pipeline. And then having put them in the pipeline, we run this issuance authorization rules. So the claims engine runs again, looks at those claims in there and says, oh, should we issue a token for this user to this relying party or this application? And if the token rules say no, that's it, we abandon it. If they say yes, we then issue, go through the issuance transform rules. And what they do is they take out the claims pipeline, create a token specifically for that application. So this application is a relying party. So that's, as far as ADFS is concerned, this guy is a relying party. As far as this guy is concerned, this guy is a claims provider. And then over on this side, the Active Directory could be a claims provider, or we could be looking at a third-party source for a claims provider. The game changer. The game changer are these guys, all right? It is now accepted, and why is it accepted that people can bring their Android in their iPads and all the rest of it? Why is it accepted? Because the CEO wants to do it, all right? And you tell him, no, he can't, all right? So that's why one of the reasons we're being driven. But obviously, productivity-wise, it makes an awful lot of sense that we can gain access from any device. And these guys, the... traditionally, federation has been done with WS Fed or WS Star, if you like. There's WS Federation, which is on a browser. There's WS Trust, which is where we're dealing with web services. So WS Star, there's a whole range of WS protocols. And SAML, those have been the traditional ones that have been used. But their tokens are in XML format. And they're quite hard work to parse, all right, and validate and everything else. And these poor little devices, you know, they struggled with it. Actually, they're probably, some of these poor little devices are better than your desktop computer these days. But they have a fairly limited stack, all right, so they struggled with it. So they needed different protocols to manage this federation. And they've gone through various incarnations. You used to sign on with OpenID. Right? OpenID has now been depreciated. So then you had another protocol that came along, which was OAuth. And the idea of OAuth is that with OAuth, the user gives a service permission to go and get the resource of the user. So typical one is resource of the user. It's photographs of the user. The service prints those photographs. The user gives permission to the print service to go and get the photographs, bring them back, and print them. Right? And so OAuth was an authorization protocol, not an authentication protocol. And various people started using it as an authentication protocol, and there were some serious hacks on the internet. Right? So what was done, there was another layer put on top of OAuth, right? And Google did something, Facebook did something, somebody else did something else, and they were all just sort of slightly different, but samey, right? And to basically come up with a standard for authentication, there's OpenID Connect, which is really brings authentication to OAuth, right? So now we've got to support those guys, right? And if we look at Microsoft's skin in the game, they got 2012 R2 ADFS. Notice it's not ADFS 3. WS Federation, WS Federation for browsing, and Microsoft Champion WS Federation. They use it for accessing SharePoint and things like that. WS Trust, but you'll be SOAP-based for your call, but that gives you a token. You've got SAML 2, you've got OAuth, it's got authorization grant profile there. If you're into OAuth, that'll mean something to you. I don't have time today to go through the different profiles that you can have with OAuth, but it supports that. And it's support for non-claims aware applications via the web application proxy. So we can actually support, and we'll see how that happens in a moment. In terms of the... Actually, I thought I updated these slides. This is very weird. In terms of the Microsoft Azure Active Directory, SAML, WS Federation, OAuth 2, but actually it does a couple of profiles in OAuth 2, and OpenID Connect. All right, so at the moment, you've got a little bit more capability in the Azure for managing devices. However, ADFS does it very well as well. And we'll come to more details in a moment. Okay, so in terms of Server 2012, R2, and ADFS, if you're familiar with ADFS, it's all about web services and things, right? And so you used to have IIS in there. And people complained because Microsoft said, oh, you can put ADFS on your domain controller. And people say, what? Install an IIS server on the domain controller when you've been telling us for years, never, ever do that. Right? And suddenly, there's this document about supporting Federation and Office 365 saying, oh, you can put ADFS on the domain controller. Anyway, what they've done to help you, if you want to go that route, is they've now pushed everything into http.sys. So IIS is not installed. Mind you, there's still web services running on a domain controller, so maybe those security issues still apply. But that's your decision. Install files have moved. They're in the Windows directory now. We've got support for device claims. So when I put a device on, I can actually look at that device and know that it's a Windows device, know which OS it's got on it, and so on, when we authenticate the device. We've got these new authentication policies which apply globally or on a per-relying party basis. So we could have a global policy that says multi-factor authentication's got to be used, or we could say use multi-factor authentication for this relying party, this one, but this guy we're not too sensitive about. We'll just allow ordinary authentication to. And then we can also specify this authentication policy based on location, device type, and group membership. So location, whether you're inside or outside the corporate network. We even get to know your IP address, so we could actually do something very fine on IP address. And device type, again, whether what type of device you're using, whether it's an Apple device, whether it's a Microsoft Surface, and so on. And also group membership, which is just the user's group membership within the AD. highly customizable, so you can add different multi-factor authentication providers. There is no standalone setup. If you've installed ADFS previously, it says, would you like to install a standalone server? And you go, oh, yeah, let's try that out first of all. And then you say, actually, it'd be useful to have a farm. And you go, can't do it. I've got to restart again. All right, so you install the first farm member. Well, they've just done away with that standalone. If you want a single ADFS server, no problem. It's a single farm member. It includes the device registration service, and the device registration is where we do a workplace join, right? So we can attach an iPad, we can attach an iPhone, right, with a workplace join. It goes through the device registration service. And then we've got the web application proxy, which acts as an ADFS proxy, but it also allows you to do application publishing. It will do pre-authentication. So we've got pre-authentication when we come in. And it also supports authentication with using Kerberos apps via a claims token. And I'll show you that in action. We'll come to that. Okay, so what I want to do is just sort of start off looking at ADFS. And what I've got here is I've got my client. I've got a couple of clients. I'm going to work on client one. And we'll just log into client one. And I'm running Fiddler. How many of you run Fiddler? Okay, Fiddler is the best ever troubleshooting tool for HTTP, HTTPS, and it is an essential tool for troubleshooting Federation. Okay, and it looks horrendously small there, but I can zoom in. Okay, I'm just going to clear that. And what I'm going to do, first of all, is go on to my Windows application. Now, this client happens to be inside corporate network at the moment. And if we look at that, what it's done is we're going to SRV1/Windows Auth. So it's actually come down, arrived at SRV1, and SRV1 is saying, come on, give me your details for authentication. All right. So I can type in the details in here. I'll have to go back to normal size to do that. And we've been authenticated, and what I particularly want to point out there, notice that the authentication authority has asserted the identity. So was there anything to do with ADFS? And the answer is absolutely not. And if we look at this, what actually has happened is we've come down to our Windows server here, and the first time we hit this guy, which is here, it says not authenticated, or unauthorized, okay? And then we hit it again. So let's see, how do I do this easily? I have to do it this way. We hit it again, and having hit it again, it said 200 okay, so we got the page. So we hit it once, it says you're not authorized, and we hit it again, and somehow we've been authorized. So what's been involved? No challenge response there. So how did it do it? It came to the server, says you're not authorized, and then suddenly it comes back and you are authorized. And if you think about the next letter in the alphabet after J, that gives you a clue. Kerberos. Yep. What actually happened is it hit this guy, says you're not authenticated, and it says, okay, I'll go get a Kerberos token. Boom, bang, in. All right. If we'd been using NTLM, you'd have seen all sorts of handshaking going on. Okay. So that's my Windows Auth app. Let's bring that down. Let's close that off. Clear that again. And I'm going to go now to a claims application. And notice this time I have gone to adfs.example.com. So I've hit my claims app, which is server one, and it said, you're not authenticated. Off you go to my Federation server that I trust. All right? And so I then put in the details in here. Oops, well, I would do, except I can't when it's bigger. Okay, so I've now come back with the claims. And if we look here, let's just take that up. What's actually happened is we've gone We've gone to server one, which is there. It says you're not authenticated. Bounces me off to the ADFS server. There's a little bit of faffing around while we authenticate against the ADFS server. And then what's happening after that is we are coming back and we are hitting SRV1, and we're hitting SRV1 with a token. And if you actually, this is going to be really difficult to do because of the resolution of this screen, but if I look at this, what we've got is a post coming back. In fact, what I'm going to do is I'm going to look at this. And inside there, there's a whole bunch of cookies, so which is showing that I'm authenticated against the ADFS server, but also it's a 200 OK, and inside that page that's being returned is the token. And there's a Federation Inspector, which you can turn on. And if we go down there, let me find something. There we go. And that's showing that I'm actually authenticated with John, and I've got my various group memberships, SIDS, and all the rest of it. So I'm actually, we can open all of this up, and over here, what we can see is we've got a UPN of John, we've got the various SIDs, we've got a name of example John, a Windows account name of example John, and so on. So all of that information has come through. Now, if we just close that off, and what I'm going to do is go to my ADFS server. So I go to the ADFS server, and I'm going to go to the claims provider trusts over here. And at the moment, I've only got Active Directory enabled. So I authenticated John against the Active Directory. But if I, for instance, take the sts.partner.example.com and enable that, so enable, right, let's have a look at the user experience again, and I go to the client and off to the claims app, and this time I get this. And what's this? Did mention it earlier. Begins with an H. Second word begins with a R. First word is somewhere you can live. Home. Well done. Home Realm Discovery. So this is the method they're using for Home Realm Discovery. So they're basically saying, hey, we're federated with both of these identities. And if we go off to the partner, what's going to happen is we're going to end up here now at the partner STS. So sts.partner.example.xtseminars.com. We're over at the partner. So we now need a partner. This is obviously not for John to authenticate, but we've got a partner in here. And my partner is called Tina. And now we can see over here that we look on here, we can actually see that Tina is now authenticated. Okay. So what's actually happened is we hit the server, it says you're not authenticated, off you go to my STS. My STS says, aha, I trust a number of entities. Which one do you want to use? And we chose the partner one, bounced off to the partner, and then we've come back to the first STS, translated the token, and came back to the application. So we've gone through that whole federation process. So it gives you an idea of how that actually works. And as say the... In fact, I closed this, didn't I? Never mind, I didn't capture it. But we could have traced that all the way through. The difference is, do you remember when I actually looked at the token that was actually being sent back to the application? We can actually see the details. By default, when we're talking between two ADFS servers, that token is encrypted. Right? But if you need to do troubleshooting, you can basically tell the server here, say, don't encrypt the token. And then you can capture the token and see what's going on. And Fiddler is just an absolute must. The number of times I've federated with a third-party identity provider, right, and they're constantly saying, it's your problem, it doesn't work. And I'm constantly saying, no, it's your problem, it doesn't work. And one of the things that we quite often do is to validate our system, we'll just federate with something like Windows Azure or Microsoft Azure. And we then test it. We know we're working. So we say, it's your problem. And then they go, oh, yes. They look a bit harder. So if you're going with a third party, there's a number of things. It's the way the XML's compressed can be wrong. You can be using the wrong signature. So you could be using SHA-256, which is ideal, but they only do SHA-1. So there's all those sort of little things that you need to troubleshoot out. And say Fiddler is exceptionally good for that. Okay, let's go back to the slide deck. So that was just a recording of the demo, just in case I had problems. Right, so the proxy, what the proxy does now is it installs as a remote access role. So if you go and look, normally what would happen, you install ADFS, and it said, would you like to install a proxy or an ADFS server? Now ADFS installs the role, and it installs just as ADFS. If you want to use the web application proxy, you need to go to remote access. Right? In fact, let me just show you that. It's the easiest way of explaining it. So if I go here to, let's go to my web application proxy, which is this guy. And we go to tools in here, and it's under remote access management, but how do we get it in there in the first place? If we go add roles and features, next, next, next. And down here, what we've got is we have the remote access web application proxy. I see it's really strange, you know, we've been used to it all being bundled up with ADFS. And now it's sort of bundled in under remote access. So if you need to find it, that's where it is. So we can use it for publishing our web apps, our claims aware web apps. There's a limited set of URL translation. You can translate the host name, right, or the host, but you can't translate a path. So if you SRV1, you know, .example.com/blah blah blah blah/blah blah, you can't translate the slash blah blahs, right? But you could translate it to SRV10 or SRV15 at some other URL. The published applications can be claims aware, or they can be Windows Auth. And if it's using Windows Auth, it's going to use the Kerberos constrained delegation. So what's going to happen is, we're going to come into the web application proxy, and it's going to take the UPN in your claim, and then it will attempt to get a Kerberos token based on that UPN. And then the configuration for this guy is sitting in the ADFS database, which is polled every minute. So if you've set it all up and you've published all your applications and something goes wrong with the web application proxy, no problem, blow it away. Install it again, and it just picks up all the settings, and you're up and running really, really quickly. If you want to add another one into the farm, just picks everything up, and you're away. It also has extranet, and Microsoft call, when you're looking in the proxy or when you're looking in ADFS, it's basically intranet and extranet. All right? And your extranet is your connection out onto the internet. For some reason, they decided to call it extranet. And you can have extranet soft account lockout. So if you've got a threshold, let's say you have a threshold of 5 on your Active Directory accounts. So 5 bad password attempts and you're locked out. Okay. Well, if someone knew that you were using your email address, right, as your UPN, and that's how you logged in, it would be very easy for someone to launch a DOS attack against the company and simply hit the ADFS server or the proxy externally and just lock everybody's accounts out internally. So what you can do is you can set, let's say, a threshold of 3. Right? Obviously, you've got to adjust your threshold. You set a soft threshold of 3. So 3 attempts, right, on the outside, on the web application proxy, will bump the bad password counter up to 3, at which point it will stop bouncing the bad password counter up, but it will lock you out at the proxy level. So what it means is you're locked out at proxy level, but you're not locked out on the ADFS, in your corporate account. Okay, so what I want to do is actually just get the web application proxy running. So we're going to go in and I'm going to see what I can do in terms of publishing in the proxy. So here, I'm going to, the management interface is very simple. It's run the remote access. And I've already got it running. That's why it just complained. And I can go publish. And what I can do is I can publish with Edge authentication. And what that means is you come to the proxy, and you've got to get through the proxy before you can even hit the internal server. Right? And you need an ADFS authentication there. So it's going to be a claims-based authentication that will happen. So we can do that. And let me just do this. And then what I'm going to do, it's just really difficult with this resolution we've got on here to show this. So we've got the Active Directory Federation service as in Edge authentication. So I'm going to go on the next page there. I'm going to publish my claims aware application. And I'm going to give it a name, which is, we'll just call it claims. We need the external URL, which at the moment has to be HTTPS, as in it will only support SSL externally at the moment. So this is srv1.example.com. And in here, what we've got is it's currently called claims is my app. All right, and external certificate, you've got to have your certificates. So let's just check that. Yep, that looks right. So externally, srv1.example.com claims, and internally the same, and we've got the right certificate. And what I need is a closing or trailing forward slash on there. So I'm just going to put that on there. And that's done there automatically. Next on there, publish. And you may have noticed I moved too quickly. There was a little bit of PowerShell, block of PowerShell, showing you how to publish it without having to go through the UI. And that says it's published successfully. If we do a refresh on there, we end up with the thing published. So there it is, sitting there. And what I'm going to do now is publish the my Windows app, and to be able to do this, what I need to do is translate from ADFS claims into a Kerberos token. So it has to use claims authentication on here, and notice it doesn't exist. The Windows app doesn't exist. But what you can do is we can go into the ADFS server, and we can actually here in the ADFS server, we can come to relying parties. So if I just take that up, our relying parties are the claims app and the device registration service. Device registration service is for doing workplace joins. And what I can do here is over on the right-hand side, it says add non-claims aware relying party. So that's how I can publish a non-claims aware app through the web application proxy. So I need to come over here. And what it's doing here to do is ask me for a display name. So I'll just call it Windows Auth as a display name. And then what it's asking me for is for an identifier. So I'm going to use HTTPS. And it is srv1. .example.com/WindowsAuth. Let's make sure I got it right. Yeah. So / Windows Auth. And that's just my identifier. Let me just grab that. Add that in. And I'll just zoom that up. So we've then got srv1.example.com Windows Auth. And that's the identifier for this thing. Next, we go next on there. It says, would you like to set up multi-factor authentication? No, I don't want to do that at the moment. Next on there. And we are finished, except we have to specify who is allowed to use this. So this is where we've got the issuance authorization rule. And what I'm going to do is add a rule. And my rule is going to be permit all users. Next on there, and finish. Okay, we now go to the web application proxy. And now we publish that. And we come in here to publish this thing. And there it is now, Windows Auth. And what we need in there is a name. So we'll just call it WAuth for the name. We need the external URL, which I've just copied across. I'll show you this in a second. And then finally, what we need in there. All right, let me just fill this certificate in. Right, let's zoom that up. Okay, external URL is srv1.example.com Windows Auth. The external certificate is srv1.example.com, the backend URL, and then what we need is the service principal name, because we're going to do a Kerberos, we're going to go off and get a Kerberos token. So we can escape out of that. Next on there. Again, just a little bit of PowerShell showing you how to do it all. And you can just copy and paste that. We'll publish that. And while that finishes, that was quick. It has published already. What we need to go is to our domain controller, which is not here. So let me just find my domain controller. There we are. And what we need to do is set up delegation. So we need to go into Active Directory using computers, go down to the proxy server itself, which is this guy here, and we're going to go to the delegation page. And actually, let me set this up. So it's Trust Computers, any authentication protocol, add using computers. And, okay, so I'll just show you this now. What I've added is HTTP as the service principal name. And so that's what I'm doing here with the delegation. And I'm basically saying that we're trusting proxy. I'm trusting proxy to delegate to SRV1, the HTTP, to the service principal name, and using any authentication protocol. So this allows me to come in with claims authentication protocol and transition to Kerberos. And so escape from that, okay that, and now let's go and go to the client. So my client over here, I'm going to move, and I'm going to put my client on the internet. So over onto the internet, okay that. And let's have a look at the experience now. So I've just gone straight over to PyPartner. Why? Because the home realm discovery is cached in a persistent cookie. So if I do a Control-Shift-Delete on that, I can delete my cookies and do it again. And I've got the option of going. Let's just go for example here. And we're going as example. Notice, anyone notice the difference? This is forms, because I'm now coming in through the proxy rather than having the Windows authentication dialog. And so I'm in. And what we can do here, which I didn't show you earlier, is under here, what I've got is inside corporate network. Previously, it would have been true. Now it's false because I've come through the proxy. It's got the internal address of the proxy, but it's also got the actual address on the internet of the client, which might not, of course, be the actual address of the client because they're probably coming through a NAT device. But you've got the NAT address that client's coming through. So if you wanted to ban all access from a particular NAT, you could do it because in the issuance transformer rules, you could actually make a decision based on an IP address. All right? So we've got that, and then if we, as long as I did it all correctly, if I go to the Windows auth, all right, we're being prompted again. I did close that. That's a shame, because I want to show you something else. If I go to the Windows auth and go into... And notice this time... Can you see that? Service asserted identity. Previously, the identity was asserted by the Active Directory, right? But now it's being asserted by the service. Who's the service? It's the proxy, which is now asserting this identity to the back-end system. Now, what I want to do is here is just show you, if I just close that. Now, I'm not going to close this. Notice... And I'm going to go to my claims app, and I'm not being prompted for credentials because what's happened is the first application authenticated against the AD, and I have a session cookie now, which will take me back in. So when I go to, I haven't closed the browser, so when I go to the next application, it's all single sign-on experience. However, if I do this, and I... close the browser, and I go back to claims, I'm being prompted again. And it would be very nice if I'm working from a device that I own not to be continuously prompted. Right? So what we have to do is tell Active Directory about the devices I own. And this is where we get into workplace join. So let's go back to the slide deck. And...
Hmm? What about if you delete cookies if you close the browser?
When your workplace joined?
No, just now.
The only cookie, when I close, so the question is about cookies when I close my browser. So all the cookies, with the exception, right, of the home realm discovery, are non-persistent cookies. So they're session cookies, and they all disappear when the browser's closed. All right? When we get workplace join, we'll have a slightly different experience, and I'll come back to your question again then, all right, to make sure we clarified it. So we expect single sign-on, and what we can do is to go for a workplace join. How does that happen? The workplace join uses device registration service. And when we do, we've got a device, we do a workplace join on the device, and that device can be your Windows phone, it can be Surface, it can be a desktop machine, it can be an Apple machine, right? So an iOS machine, so your iPad, your iPhone, Android support's coming as well, so it can be any device, and Microsoft do recognize these other devices exist now, and once you've joined it, what happens is a certificate is deployed onto this, right, device. So that certificate can now be sent back and checked so we know it's the device. Right? There's also an object created in the AD to support that device. So if we go and... I've covered this slide first. Group policy, as I said before... nothing to do with workplace join. So you don't get group policy. And join device can be enrolled for management through Windows Intune. And Windows Intune has the mobile desktop management system on it. Right? And you can integrate Windows Intune with Configuration Manager. Right? And therefore, you can do the changes in Configuration Manager, but effectively, it's Intune that manages the mobile device. So you could use Intune on its own, or if you want a richer experience where you're managing your internal systems and your mobile device systems, then what you do is you integrate Intune with Config Manager. So you've also got, you enable administration of device and also the ability to deploy applications. In terms of authentication policies, here I've got an authentication policy where I can say, basically, I want to use multi-factor if you belong to a particular group, all right? Maybe you're using an unregistered device or a registered device, I can choose. So, you know, group membership, registered, unregistered, whether you are on the extranet or the intranet, right? The extranet, remember, is outside the organization, so the internet. And I can choose the type of multi-factor I use. Out of the box, it has certificate auth with it, right? But you can add, there's the Microsoft phone factor, which you've probably all seen demonstrations of where you try to log in and it says, oh, you've got a, you know, and you get a phone call and you've got to hit the hash key or the pound key to actually get in. So this lot can be done on a per relying party basis or it can be done globally. Right? So you could say, I've got more sensitive applications that I need multi-factor authentication to gain access to. So it's up to you how you do that. And if you install Phone Factor, then you can actually download install Phone Factor, and that gives you this ability of, you know, either getting a phone call or an SMS text message and so on. Okay, so let's actually go ahead and do a workplace join. So I'll just escape out of there. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to go do a workplace join, and let's do it on this client here. Now, I happen to be logged in as this client is actually domain joined as well, but I'm going to do a workplace join on him. So I go to PC settings, network, and workplace, and I'm going to say join. And it's connecting to the workplace now, to the device registration service. And what it should prompt me in a second or two, which it has, which is lucky. It's pre-populated that, and it's very difficult to see. And I do apologize for the screen resolution. But we've got john@example.com. Why did it pre-populate that? Well, I'm logged on at john@example.com. Happens to be a domain joined device. Otherwise, this would be blank, and I would have to say who I want a workplace join as. So as an example of that, I can do it on the other machine. Let's just complete this first. So I can actually, no, let's just have that experience. Go to client 2, and on client 2, I go to workplace join. Now, client 2 is not a domain joined device. So network, workplace, and it's what it's doing. Because it's not joined to the domain, it's saying, okay, so who do you want a workplace join as? And obviously, I need a credential for someone actually inside the organization. So if I chose, for instance, Maria, actually, no, I can't because she's not. I've moved her recently. Anyway, it doesn't matter. I could choose John. I changed Maria's UPN. So it's saying john@example.com. And what actually happens is we're now being hit with this as to do it. And this is the sort of browser, if you like, capability on Windows 8.1. And it's actually using a type of OAuth2 authentication to do it. So let's just cancel out of there. So what I'm going to do is just do an Alt F4 on that. And I'm going to go back to this client, put in the details, and sign in. So this has now joined the workplace, all right? So let's go and have a look. So we'll do an Alt F4 on there. Go back to the desktop, and let's go across to my claims app, okay? Prompted, all right, to log in. Right, we look down here, and there's absolutely nothing about device registration. There's nothing about the device we've just come from. The reason being is we need to go over to ADFS, and on the ADFS server, we need to come down to the authentication policies, edit those, and we need to choose enable device authentication. Okay, so I'm going to enable device authentication. Okay, that. And we can, having enabled device authentication, we can go back to our client. Let's close that and go in with the experience again. Remember, it's forms authentication because we're coming through the proxy. And what's happened here is did I actually save that change? Strange. I enabled device authentication, clicked OK, and I've come back onto the client, and for some reason, it has not taken effect. It may be a latency in terms of actually getting the thing through. So I'm going to go back into claims. Okay, well, it hasn't happened at the moment. So what I'm just going to do is I'm going to fire up an MMC on here. And I'm going to add the snap-in for the certificates. And it goes into the user's profile here. And what we should find under here, in the personal store, we're going to have a whole raft of certificates. The reason being is that those certificates are all to do, I'll make it bigger. Those certificates are all to do with the HTTPS interception that Fiddler's doing. All right, so it puts in a dummy certificate to allow that to happen. The very top certificate there is, let me just open it up and just check. Today's the 17th, so this is the correct one. And what the top certificate is issued to MS Organization Access, or issued by, it has a GUID, which is 2A28, all right? And this certificate is the one that just got deployed when we did a device join, okay? Associated, remember that 2A28, if we go back over to my, let's just go to my domain controller. What we've got on the domain controller, if we go down to registered devices, we've got a 2A28 device in here. And let's just use the attribute editor. And let me just move down here. And okay, so what we've actually got here is it's the OS type is Windows. Its OS version is 6.3. 9600, which is the Windows 8.1. And down there, you can see MSDS registered owner and the SID associated with that. That is actually John SID, okay? And if I could scroll across in here, I would show you the remainder of the SID, but I can't scroll across while it's maybe. So it looks like it's all worked. So let's just go back to the client and try one more time on here. Because it has to come through, it's to the proxy. So we'll just make sure. Ah, do you know what? Ha ha! I had Fiddler running. You can't fiddle. You can't fiddle when the certificate's being issued. All right. So that would explain it. In fact, if you want to intercept, if you need to debug, you want to intercept HTTPS, right? Fiddler's doing it by acting as a man in the middle and putting a certificate in there. Doesn't work in this situation, right? However, what you can do is you can use Wireshark, right, rather than the Microsoft Network Monitor. And in Wireshark now, you can load the SSL certificate with a private key, right, from your target web service into Wireshark, and then it can decode the HTTPS. Obviously, this is for test and evaluation purposes. But actually, it's quite interesting because Wireshark's capability of that has to make you think a little bit. You know how you say, oh, well, it doesn't matter. We don't have to be too careful with our SSL certs on our web services because nobody's going to leave the company and impersonate one of our web servers. But if they get that cert and they're using Wireshark, they can intercept all of your SSL traffic, obviously, as long as they've got a tap onto the thing. So be careful on that, but it's a really good troubleshooting technique. So I'm going to go in again here. So example, John. Sign in, and this time I'm hoping, yes, we have, which is what I was looking for, is the device claims. So I've got device claims in there, which says it's Windows, it's managed, is managed. Oh, sorry, it's not managed because I haven't got Intune managing it, but it is registered user, so that's true in there. Okay, and then, of course, we can base our, if we go back to ADFS again, in fact, let me show you something first. Come back in. No need to re-authenticate, right? Because it says it's a registered device, and of course I can go across to my Windows auth and no prompt. So now if I come in with a registered device, we don't get prompted again, right? And the reason we don't get prompted is the cookie that authenticates us to ADFS has become persistent, right? And it's a persistent cookie that has a persistent value of 7 days, I think is the default, but it's renewable for up to 90 days, right? So for 90 days, you will never be prompted again if you're coming in from a registered device. But you say, hang on, registered device has been stolen. No problem, just go in that, you remember that device object in AD? Just disable it. As soon as you've disabled it, that device will no longer get in with that persistent cookie, all right? So it's, and if you want proof, it's a persistent cookie. So for you, for the question that came up earlier, if I do a Control-Alt-Delete on that, and I go in there, and there we are. We're now being prompted to actually sign in. Yeah. So that got rid of the persistent cookie in that case. And then if I go back to ADFS, and on the ADFS server here, where is it? Up here. What I can do is I can edit this, and I can say that I could do it for registered devices. I know this is a bit back to front. Registered devices need to use multi-factor authentication. Okay. So now what happens, if I go back to my client, and by the way, I'm using certificate multi-factor, and the certificate could be on a smart card, virtual smart card, or it can just be in your certificate store. So now if I go... I'm being prompted to authenticate. The reason being is I blew that cookie away. And now it's asking me for a certificate. So if I can choose my logon certificate and I'm in. Okay, now let's just close that off and let's go back again. And we're getting, because we've got the device registered, we've gone, in fact, let's just do, and that, if I go to my, so registered device is using the multi-factor. Okay, let's go back to the slide deck, and there's my demo recording. And then if we want to integrate with Azure, you saw this, a lot of you came this morning, and I just set the scene. You've got the Windows Azure Active Directory and the Microsoft Azure Active Directory. This guy's about Kerberos authentication. He's about Active Directory services. You look after it completely. This guy, the infrastructure's entirely looked after for you, and it's all about federated authentication. And how do we do that authentication? Well, number one, we need to be a directory tenant. How do we become a directory tenant? Well, you can sign up for an Azure Active Directory, or if you've got an Office 365, you're already a tenant, okay? And as I mentioned this morning, there is the AD Premium, which you need the enterprise agreement for. And what the AD Premium will do is it will give you things like the ability to manage groups in the Azure Active Directory, the ability to customize your interface, and so on. And then in terms of what it does is we talk to it using REST APIs and Graph APIs. They use OAuth 2 for authentication. We can talk to it with the management portal. We can synchronize our users up there, but we can also synchronize the passwords of those users up there. If you go for the premium edition, you can do a password reset, right? And if you do a password reset, what it does is it currently resets the password on the Azure object. So now, locally and in Azure, you're out of sync. Nasty. But this month, there is a synchronization which will actually sync back to your AD. So you can actually have a password reset portal, so you don't need anybody else's password reset portal. And you can have it so you get a phone confirmation and all sorts of bits and pieces. And then it will resync back down to your AD. And then what can you gain access to? Basically anything, as long as it's using Federation. When you create it, you get yourdomain.onmicrosoft.com, and then you can load your own domains up in there, and you have this application gallery where you can choose which applications you would like to publish to a user. So we'll just do the authentication flows first. So what happens here now is you browse, you're not authenticated, up you go to Azure, and you authenticate, you get a security token back. You have no control today of what's in that security token, and it's a very, very sparse token. All right? So you say, yeah, but I need to know the guy's manager. No problem. You just use the REST APIs, and you can actually access the AD to get the manager's details. The token is being enhanced. It will have group membership in it and other bits and pieces, but this is so easy to use that, you know, the problem is normally what has to happen is the application developer has to say, where's the information stored? Oh, it's in a SQL database. Oh, it's in a lightweight directory store, you know. Oh, it's LDAP. And they need to do that programming. But here, they simply call into the REST API and they get the information they want. Very, very easy configuration to make that call. So we get back cookies. If you want to integrate with your own AD, all right, so you come up to MAD, and MAD says, you're a federated user. So it does a home realm discovery, which is automated, and you're a federated user because what you want is for your users to authenticate against your AD. So you've got to deploy your own ADFS. Now, this used to be the way that you got single sign-on with Office 365, all right? So you didn't have to worry about different passwords and things. But actually, you've got to think very hard whether you even want to do this anymore, because now you've got password synchronization up into the Microsoft Azure AD, and you'll have synchronization back again for passwords. What is the point of actually authenticating your users on-prem? Probably none. There are a few reasons you might want to do it, but really think, don't follow the original guidance was, you've got to have ADFS on-prem. You may need ADFS for other things, but not necessarily for Office 365. And we process the token, and then finally we get to the application. Now, when it comes to using, we need a directory synchronization to get our users up there. So that's another component we'll need to set up. ACS gives you this ability of interfacing with social media or social identity, Live ID, Google, Yahoo, etc. It's still called Live ID. Of course, it's now officially a Microsoft account, but it's still called Live ID in the ACS interface. How this works is your user hits your resource, and that, by the way, could be an app or it could be your STS. So you've already come to your STS, and it basically sends you up to ACS. ACS says, hey, I've got a whole bunch of identity providers. Which one would you like to sign up with? And then we get a token back from there, which only ACS understands. We bounce that back to ACS. It does the processing and returns you a token that your STS or your application can actually understand. Okay, so just to give you a very, very brief demo of this, what I've got is I've actually set up my ADFS server here in terms of claims providers. Let me just enable these, and then I'll show you. I have a claims provider, which is my Active Directory, the partner that we used. I've got Azure AD, which I can use directly, and I've got ACS. So let's now go and actually have a look at how this looks to the client. So I'm going to the client, and what I'm going to do is blow away the cookies because I want to get rid of the persistent cookie that we've got for Home Realm Discovery. Okay, let's go again. So that was the partner. We've got in there AD, and we've got ACS. So if we choose AD, we end up at the portal, which is the general portal. And if I start typing my name in here, so I can do John at, actually, I'm going to use Maria at XT Seminars. And now when I tab, it automatically does the Home Realm, effectively does the Home Realm Discovery. Because what it's done, it's worked out, actually, do you know, you are this tenant here, and you're as a tenant, you've customized your interface. So that's happened automatically. And if I go back on here and I choose ACS, it now comes, what would you like to sign in as today? A Google account, happens to have an Azure AD account as well, but also a Live ID account. So I could choose now to sign into my applications, which are on-premise, supported by my ADFS server, using a Windows Live account. All right. So that's and this is actually leveraging the Azure Cloud AD. So question comes back, and if we just go back as a summary on here, is where's that thing? And the answer is that thing is absolutely anywhere. So the application can be anywhere, we can have the identity anywhere, the device can be anywhere, and as the support grows, the device can be anything. And that brings us to the end of the session. If you're interested, I'm doing a pre-conference day at TechEd. I know I'm doing it in North America because that's just in 2.5 weeks or so, 3 weeks or something. In theory, I'm doing it at TechEd in Europe when TechEd Europe is properly announced. It's in October. It's in Barcelona. I've been asked if I will do the pre-conference day there. And it's a pre-conference which is described as hybrid identity in the world of consumerization. Sounds great. Basically, it means bringing consumer devices into the enterprise and how do we support them. And what we've covered today, we covered in a lot more detail plus a lot more information. So if you're interested, book on that, and it should be an interesting day. And consultancy is always available, and please, I should put it back a bit longer so it gets recorded. And please don't fill in the avowals. Thank you very much. And if you've got any questions, by all means, come down and ask away. And have a great...